Monday, March 6th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, we talk about how not to suck at podcasting.
Let's do this.
So we're back after a long weekend of geek.
A long weekend of not enough sleep.
Yeah, what was originally going to be two friends driving up from North Carolina to hang out ended up as all of our friends come over to our house and trashing it.
And we didn't even get to do that much stuff because we spent a lot of time in transport, in sleep, in eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best part was how I lost my cell phone in Manhattan.
Good job.
Yeah. Well, actually, I found out later that I lost it on the train to Manhattan. And I love technology. So I lost my cell phone, right? And I keep trying to call my cell phone on someone else's cell phone all day, and it doesn't answer. And then Scott here gets an email or an instant message, right?
Oh, is this a message?
Yeah. So, and then Scott says, oh, it's this guy. Aim him here. And he aims me, and he's like, hey, I got your cell phone. And I offered to give him some money, and he offered to mail it to me, and I should have it tomorrow. So, once again, New Yorkers are awesome, and they're not as evil as all you non-New Yorkers seem to think they are.
Of course, you're still pretty crummy for losing that cell phone.
Eh, what do you want? I had it on a belt clip under a trench coat.
Yeah, see, I used to lose shit all the time. I can't tell you how many Timex watches I've lost.
I haven't lost my wallet since middle school. I'm proud of that.
I lost a wallet, like, freshman year of college? Sophomore year? I don't remember. It doesn't matter. I haven't lost anything since then. So I haven't lost anything in like 4 years. Before that, I used to lose shit all the time.
But the dude who found my cell phone, when I was offering, you know, hey, I'll give him some money, whatever. Since, you know, I do Geek Nights, I offered him, hey, if you have a website or anything you want to promote, I'll help you out. And his response to that was, well, actually.
Well, so, what does he want to promote?
I don't know if any of you out there actually live in Tarrytown, New York. It's one of the burbs kind of New York City. Or if you know anyone who does. But this EF International Language School is looking for host families to host Chinese and I forget what other countries, exchange students.
So if you live in Tarrytown and you have a house and you want to host an exchange student, that's a pretty specific kind of person.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, you might know someone. We've got a lot of eclectic. We got the dudes in Australia. We got the guy in the UK.
I'll tell you what, if anyone listening to this podcast ends up hosting one of the families for this program in Tarrytown, New York, I'll give you $5.
All right.
That's how sure I am that none of you are...
Yeah, but like if you know a guy, I promise you I'd plug the site. There's going to be a link there, so if this is at all interesting to you, check it out.
You know, maybe if you're moving to Tarrytown soon. Or maybe you want to host an exchange student so much, you're going to move to Tarrytown and get a house there.
You know what? If you do that, I'll give you another $5.
Holy crap.
And we'll give you a free Geek Nights t-shirt.
Oh, good thing they don't exist.
Yeah. No, you'll get a t-shirt that says Geek Nights on it in some fashion.
Yeah, I'll take one of my old dirty t-shirts with a Sharpie.
Yeah, that was the expected joke.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so... I don't know if you realize, but Firefox, how much does Firefox cost?
Nothing.
How much money does Mozilla make from Firefox?
I would assume nothing.
You assume wrong.
Oh, really?
Let's start a guessing game. Ready? Make a guess.
All right, $5.
How many dollars? What?
All right, it's either going to be real low or real high.
Well, this is how much money Mozilla has made from Firefox ever. As in, as long as Firefox has existed.
Ever.
Huh.
$1 million.
Higher.
$1 billion.
Lower.
$1 million and a dollar.
$72 million.
That's about $72 million more than I expected.
Right, so you know where this money comes from? It's kind of crazy.
All right.
In the top right of Firefox, you'll notice that little searchy box.
Do people pay to be there?
No. You notice how Google is the default for that searchy box.
All right.
If I make a Google search in that searchy box, and then I get to, let's say I search for, I don't know, fire, which is my favorite Google search.
And yeah, he's not kidding. He searches for it fairly regularly.
All right, so let's actually do it right now. Let's go to the searchy box in Firefox and type in fire. Press enter. On the right side of this page, there's an advertisement for fire. Planning a career in firefighting? Explore the possibilities. www.collegeboard.com.
Is there anyone selling fire?
Yeah, there's actually a whole bunch of paid-for links on the side of this page. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 sponsored links on the side of this page.
Outstanding.
If I click one of these links, right, that means that the person who paid for that advertisement gives money to Google for that ad, for, you know, the impression or the click or whatever.
Does Mozilla get a cut?
If I click on this link, then 80% of the money that that advertiser gives to Google actually goes to Mozilla.
I did not know that, and I never would have guessed that.
This is only for the paid links on the side, of course.
Yeah.
However,
you know,
that, over time, that has amounted to $72 million.
Surprisingly, when I search for a product, I have more than once clicked on one of those links to get what I wanted.
I click on them. You know what usually happens when I'm looking to buy something? Like when I'm when I'm looking for information, I never click there. But when I'm looking to buy a product, and what'll happen is usually like a specialized online store will appear over there. And that's what I want. That's useful. I don't care if it's an ad. It's the link I want. You know, and if it saves me going to the 10th page to click where no one gets any money for the same link, it's just stupid.
Of course, sometimes I'll search for mesothelioma and click on all the links to cost evil people money.
Yeah, that works.
I urge all of you to search for mesothelioma and click on all the links.
Maybe we should do a show on mesothelioma and what's the other one?
What is the other one?
It begins with like a P.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I forgot. It used to get posted to my site all the time.
So I'm sure a lot of you have seen that AOL has opened up the AIM instant messaging SDK.
Finally, I can freaking get a client besides the AIM client and send files reliably to my friends. Holy
crap.
Yeah,
yeah, you'd think that. Now, the headline seems great. All right, now there's an official SDK. I can officially interface with AIM. It'll be great. It won't be a hack. It won't be reverse engineered. Upon further reading, it's bullshit.
What do you mean? How could it be bullshit? They give you software that allows you to interface with AIM, right?
All right, they give you the software. However, there are a number of restrictions as to what you can actually do with that software.
Now, are these license on paper restrictions or physical software restrictions?
These are license on paper, you'll go to jail, as opposed to physical, you can just get around them.
So wait, I could just take the SDK and do it anyway?
You could, but you could get in trouble.
Is there like some sort of key system where they know, like Google has with their SDKs?
I don't know. I didn't look too much into it.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know, because if there is, then you really couldn't disobey the license.
Yeah, the gist of it is that, for one, you can use this for whatever you want, any non-commercial purposes, but you cannot, one, create a client or use the SDK with a client that is, quote, multi-headed, meaning it can connect to more than one type of network.
What the hell? That just defeats the whole purpose. No one's going to use it.
Yeah.
That's like...
If GM used it, they'd have to drop support for, I don't know, everything.
Yeah, well, there goes that.
Two, if you're going to use it on any sort of wireless device, like a PDA or a cell phone, you have to get a separate pay license.
Oh, see, that's the freaking scam I hate the worst. That's almost as bad as the first one.
Trying to get AIM to work on anything.
Because I have a BlackBerry, right? And there's no reason that this BlackBerry piece of hardware could not be a really, really good IM client, right? The problem is, if all the software that makes it be an IM client costs a lot of money, and the only reason it costs a lot of money is because... like this crazy vendor lock-in bullshit.
Yeah. So this won't solve that because you can't use the code if you're going to do anything like that.
Such bastard.
Number three, if you want to make something for any sort of corporate use at all, nope, you have to pay for that separately too.
Well, I guess AIM doesn't want you competing with their AIM corporate products. That
their
makes
AIM corporate
little...
products are terrible.
I know, but at least it makes a little more sense than the first two.
Well, the first two, look at the first one. They don't want people to be able to connect to multiple networks because then why do they need AOL?
Because they're still using AOL, they're just also using other things.
Honestly, the only reason I use AOL is because some of my idiot friends won't give it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Use Jabber. Jabber, 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 Jabber. I'll do a show on Jabber one time.
I'm getting evil looks from our guest who is not... her microphone is turned off currently, and it'll be turned on in the second half of the show. And she uses AIM.
I don't know how old school all the listeners be, but when I had a computer, it ran DOS and Windows 3.1.
Yeah, like DOS as in there's no such thing as networking.
And there's no such thing as...
a GUI. Well, I guess you could use DOS shell.
32 bits.
Yeah, Windows 3.1.1.
And really, you only have two mouse buttons that do anything. The third one just kind of does nothing unless you're playing a game.
In Windows 3.1.1, you could minimize your whole computer and then you couldn't do anything.
And when you exited Windows, you went to DOS instead of turning your computer off.
Yeah, yeah, that was fantastic. Those were awesome days.
Yeah, so some people still use Windows 3.1, and I don't blame
who?
Them. What?
Who?
Well, you don't use it as your primary OS.
Oh.
But some people still use it because you got to play those old Windows 3.1 games.
Well, I'll note to you that OS 2 Warp kicked the shit out of Windows 3.1.
Actually, I had OS 2 Warp and Windows 3.1.
I still have it. In fact, I have the installers for it for the most current version that you guys can't get right now about 15 feet away from me in the closet.
And
I work for IBM and we still use OS 2.
And I had DOS all on the same computer. And OS 2 Warp worked pretty well and had some fancy stuff, but it didn't have any software that was useful.
Oh, it was very robust. It was good for servers.
So I always ended up dual booting and going back to, you know, DOS Windows to, you know, play DOS games.
Yeah. So anyway.
Anyway. Somebody, awesome, made this thing called Calmira. C-A-L-M-I-R-A. It's Calmira XP 4.0. Calmira XP 4.0 is something you can download, put it on your Windows 3.1 computer, and it makes your Windows 3.1 computer look and function as if it was Windows XP.
Now, Scott showed this to me. He just showed me a screenshot and asked, what's up with this picture? And I looked at it, and it was Windows XP with maybe a little skin to it. And I couldn't figure it out. It looks exactly like Windows XP.
And there's even a start menu and everything. And it's really scary. But this computer is actually Windows 3.1.
Now, so, is it an actual old slow computer, too?
You know, they don't say that. I have a feeling they're running Windows 3.1 on DOSBox or something.
That would make sense. I mean, not many people have 486s kicking around that still work well.
Yeah, it's the only explanation I can come up with for it. But I just got to say, Windows 3.1, like, back in the day, it was great. But if you try to use it now, you just want to kill yourself. I mean, they don't even have the X button on the Windows. You had to double-click in the top left and the little menu thing
to
close the window.
Yep, that little, like, Maya-shaped kind of thing.
Yeah, and, like, you couldn't really... And you had to use the program manager for everything. So, like, the desktop was always hidden behind the program manager, but the icons on the desktop you wanted to use, and,
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why in Windows 95, the program manager was still there, but it was hidden, and they gave you the start menu instead, and that's what it was all about. But, yeah, so now this makes Windows 3.1 real usable. So you can get a computer and load it up with a pile of Windows 3.1 games, and you're good to go.
Because actually, if you have a really old, slow computer, a lot of new Linuxes, you can do stuff with them, but Windows 3.1 actually is pretty robust for how little it is and how weak it is.
Yeah, the difference is if you install an old Linux or a Linux designed to run an old computer like Ubuntu Lite or something like that, you can run Firefox. If you decide you want to run Windows 3.1 on your old computer, you have to run Netscape 2 Gold.
Hey, at least you get Netscape 2.
Actually, you're really badass, you can get Netscape 3 Gold or Netscape 4 point
Netscape Communicator.
Whatever. Yeah, that one.
The point at which I switched to IE.
Yep, I have a Windows Netscape Communicator CD.
God.
You want it?
No.
You sure?
Yeah.
You can run it in Wine.
Yeah, you know, that's really what I want to spend a weekend doing.
It might be better than running Windows 3.1.
All right. So I had one thing of the day, but I saw a new thing just before the show, and since the rule of the thing of the day is that I have to use the coolest thing I've seen on the interwebs since the last time I did a show, I have to use this now. You're all familiar with Fight Club and Fight Clubs. Scott here was actually accused of being a member of a Fight Club.
I was not accused, I was...
You were questioned
one
about...
One level below suspected, so I
They
think...
asked you if an injury you had sustained was due to your participation in a Fight Club.
That is correct.
They used the words Fight Club, did they not?
That is correct.
I find this hilarious, because for any of you who actually know Scott, he is weaker than a puppy.
I'm not weaker than a puppy. I could kill a puppy if I wanted to.
I don't know. I think a puppy could just worry you to death.
Well, it depends. I mean, if it was a wolf puppy, it might bite me and claw me, and it wouldn't be happy. And then maybe the big wolf would come and eat me. But if it was like, you know, one of those, you know, those little weird tiny dogs that are all scarily small? If it was like a puppy, one of those, then it really wouldn't have much to do.
So anyway, this is a Fight Club, and they have videos of their fights. Now, you might wonder, why would Rim link to just a Fight Club? He's not into fighting. Well, this is a nerd Fight Club, and you have to see it to believe it. Imagine nerds hitting each other with plastic knives.
Yeah, like, two nerds put on little, like, safety helmets, and there's, like, an officiator and stuff to make sure no one gets hurt and whatnot. and they just go at each other with plastic knives. It's kind of, it's like, wow, these nerds don't get out. Wow.
Hey, they're getting out more than some other nerds.
True, but not enough.
Yeah.
1 foot out of the closet ain't two.
All right, anyway, so today we were debating, we were going to do a themed week this week. Maybe we'll still do one depending on today, but today's going to be another one of those how not to suck days.
How not to suck.
At podcasting.
Mm-mm-mm. Now, well, we're at least the technical part.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about, you know, the like coming up with an idea or learning how to not say, like, yeah.
That's up to you.
So,
Yeah.
But just the very basics of, one, how to make your podcast not sound like an ass. Two, how to use a microphone in a somewhat proper manner. You know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we're not like, you know, the gods of radio or anything.
No.
But our podcast, I know from listening to a lot of podcasts, including ours, that like some podcasts, they have some noise in the background, and that's sometimes tolerable. You know, some of them, the interview parts or when they have someone on the phone, it's staticky. That's tolerable because even real radio stations have that. There's nothing you can do about it.
Well, I'm talking about like...
I'm talking about you podcasters who are so amateur. I mean, it's okay to be amateur, but when you, like, the volume is inaudible or when one guy on the show is incredibly loud and the other guy is so quiet and I have to keep adjusting my volume as you both talk and I can't hear... Or when I had to turn the volume in my car up so high that when the next podcast comes on that's made by someone who knows what they're doing, it freaking kills my eardrums and I had to turn it all the way back down.
Now, we've got two perspectives on this because, like I said earlier, we have a guest. Now, we have here a friend of ours who's been laughing hysterically at how we actually do this podcast off mic. But now she's got a mic in our hand. So we've got Nuri here. So you do a podcast, I hear.
Yeah, I do a podcast about geeky art stuff.
What's it called?
Oh, it's called Artist Alley, all one word.
Yeah, because you know you're getting a link.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I'll be linked in the show notes.
Tell people the URL if they're schmucks and they don't visit the website.
Yeah, you people who don't visit the website.
Oh, right. Okay, well, the URL is www.candycornstudios.com, and the easiest way to get to it is to just click on the podcast link.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And candy corn, if you don't know what candy corn is, well... You can go to hell.
Yeah, there's a good story behind that. But
oh, is there?
We'll let you know on Halloween.
Yeah, there is. I don't know if you guys ever listen to Lewis Black.
Yeah, we do.
He's got this great sketch.
I know the bit about candy corn.
How candy corn is
you bite
bad
into the
thing.
Yellow part, thinking it'll taste like corn, but it doesn't. It tastes like ass.
And then you eat another one. Fuck.
Yeah, Why did I eat another one? Want to know the detailed story, you can come talk to me on the website.
Yeah. So basically, we've got her here, one, because she came up for the weekend from North Carolina to hang out in New York City, which she had never been to.
Ever.
Da, da, da.
We can talk about that on Thursday.
We've got two basic perspectives here on how to make your podcast not suck. We're going to have the low-budget version and the no-budget version.
Mm-hmm. That's me.
Yeah, not for any bad reason, just she's still in college and we're out of college.
Now, the reason we've left out the high-budget version is because... If you have a high budget, you don't need to know shit. You bought stuff.
Yeah.
Or you hired a radio guy, or who knows.
Any problem you have with audio can be solved by spending money.
Yep.
We're going to talk about how to do it without spending money, which is key, because I'm sorry, I'd like to listen to podcasts, but most of you out there just don't know how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Even some of you, the content is bad, but some of you, just despite your content, which I want to listen to, I just can't. It's just...
Yeah, we were actually watching Nuri earlier on her little Mac laptop working on trying to edit one of her previous podcasts.
Well, it's not actually that easy on a Mac. My computer does not have a microphone input or anything like that, so I had to get all this crap to hook up something in there so it would record.
Yeah. I mean, I bought a bunch of equipment, but I have more money. But I guess the nice perspective here is, consider this. She spent pretty much no money other than, you know, like minimal things.
Well, I got some stuff for free, too.
Yeah, that always helps. But you can always get stuff for free. If you can't get anything at all for free, you might not and you can't afford to buy anything, you might not have the resources to do a podcast just yet.
Yeah, you might not have any friends. And if you don't have any friends, that means no one likes to listen to you, which means you probably shouldn't make a podcast.
But basically, we've spent, Scott and I, not counting hosting, because actually our hosting hosts a lot more than just Geek Nights. We spent less than $200, and that includes everything.
Yep.
Nuri has spent, how much have you spent?
On, you mean my equipment or yeah, my like hosting or what?
Total based on all the podcast stuff that you bought that is for the podcast.
Okay,
and the podcast
I spent
alone.
$40 on the little adapter thingy to connect things to my computer.
Which you out there probably won't need.
Yeah, unless you have a Mac laptop, in which case, come talk to me on my website and I'll tell you what I did.
Well, at least if you have a Mac laptop, you get the GarageBand as
yeah,
opposed
to
having to.
Yeah, but let me just say, the built-in microphone on the laptops... They sound like ass when you record with them.
Well, actually, that's the first thing we can talk about. If your microphone came with your sound card, you can't podcast with it. It'll sound like ass.
That's right.
That is a universal rule.
At a minimum, it seems to me that the $20 or $30 Logitech headset mics, those are like the minimum. That's tolerable if you set it up with the right volume and stuff.
Yeah, the microphones that come with the computers tend to pick up so much ambient sound that you hear everything else that's going on in the room.
Yeah. Now, I'd say what we use, we bought like $20 unidirectional Radio Shack mics that come with little like stands and everything. And if you're low budget, those are definitely the way to go. They're like 20 or 30 bucks. If anything, if you're not using a headset, or especially if there's more than one person in the podcast, get a unidirectional microphone. If you don't know what that means, don't worry about it. Just get a unidirectional microphone and point it directly at the person who's talking.
Yeah, I can speak to that because the microphones that I have are not unidirectional. They're something called cardioid. And they pick up sound not just in one direction, but in multiple directions. And unfortunately, that means that it picks up all kinds of machine noise and airplanes and people honking on the highway outside and everything.
I mean, basically, like, there's omnidirectional microphones, which are, they'll get everything. They're like the whole room. Any of you who might have found the lost episodes of Geek Nights that are floating out there before we kind of went live, we used an omnidirectional microphone in the middle of the room.
Yeah, and that was pretty terrible because that was also one that came with the computer. It was
yeah,
like
in fact,
$5.
It's sitting next to my computer right now, and it even looks cheap.
Yeah, it's $2, if yeah. that.
Now, there's cardioids, there's hypercardioids. Basically, if you don't know anything about audio, this is really going to be a low-tech. We're not going to tell you, like, the base details of how all this equipment works, because that'll be another show. This is just how to not suck. So, if you don't know anything about microphones, go to Radio Shack, ask for a cheap, unidirectional, dynamic microphone.
Unidirectional.
And get the Radio Shack brand. The other brands just cost more. They're almost the same thing.
Yeah, like, if they have two microphones, and they look kind of the same, and one's $40 and one's $20... If you don't know the difference, you won't notice the difference.
Yeah. Oh, pick them up first, though. Pick them up and see if it feels comfortable in your hand. Because if there's one that's $20 and one that's $30, and the one that's $20 is really heavy and hard to hold, and the one that's $30 feels good in your hand, it might be worth the $30.
Or by the same token, if it feels nice and heavy and solid, yeah.
If yeah, but at the same time, they might just put weights in there to confuse you.
It all depends on what you like.
Actually, our old DVD player, we bought this crappo DVD player. And inside it...
The like Apex?
It felt kind of heavy. But inside it was this tiny little, like, poorly soldered circuit board. And something that I'm pretty sure was just a weight to make it feel more sturdy than it was. I couldn't figure out a use for it. It wasn't any sort of electronic device.
It's like when they sell those little, like, action figure collectible toys. And to make it so you don't know what toy is in each box, they put weights in
there. Oh, yeah, the PVCs.
Yeah, I hate that.
Now, while we're talking about microphones, consider the difference between me saying Jack Thompson and me saying Jack Thompson. Now, the latter one probably sounded a lot worse. Because if you say P's, T's, any kind of really hard syllable.
B and D and...
Yeah, air comes out of your mouth.
S.
And it hits the microphone. Like so. Pa, 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 pa.
Okay, air is always coming out of your mouth, but on those particular letters, it comes out in a really hard, fast manner that makes a really loud spike in the sound volume.
Now, spikes aren't that bad normally if you have equipment in the way, but unless you're like us, I mean, we have a compressor, which we'll talk about in a minute, and we don't have to worry about it so much, but if you're not going to spend a lot of money at all, you're probably not going to have a compressor, which means you don't want your audio to clip. Basically, the best way to make audio sound good is you want to record so that the average volume is as high as you can make it on the, like, the gain, the input meter. As you're recording, there's probably, in whatever program you use, there's some sort of meter. You want to be very close to the top of that all the time, but you never want to hit the top.
So you want the volume to be as loud as you can go without going off the edge.
Now, if you're popping all the time, you know, P's and T's into the microphone, you're going to have these big spikes, which means you're going to have to set the input gain, the volume you record at, a lot lower, which means your actual signal is going to be a lot lower. And you could say your noise floor is going to be real high. Your podcast is going to sound like ass.
And that's when, you know, your podcast is so quiet, I have to turn the volume way up in the car, and it pisses me off.
Yeah, because then you turn it up and you hear all the noise in the background.
And or you have to be like me and use a noise reduction filter and then turn up the vocals. And that doesn't necessarily sound like ass, but it doesn't sound as good as you would if you just use a pop filter.
Now, actually, here, I'm the only one who actually has a pop filter in front of me. Nuri's holding the mic about 4 inches from her face, which is good. Scott pretty much just shoves the mic into his mouth.
Yep. That's because I like to lay down and be lazy and all that.
I'm laying down and being lazy, too, but I know how to not talk directly in, you know, towards the mic.
Yep. Now, luckily, Scott actually isn't that bad about popping. I'm real bad. Just the way I talk and the way I form vowels, I pop all the time.
That's because you're a northern hick.
Yeah, quiet. You grew up in Michigan. Hey, get me drunk enough and I'll start speaking like a Michigander again.
Man, I'm the only civilized person here. I'm from Connecticut.
Yeah.
Connecticut and New York.
Yeah.
Wait, you say you lived in New York. You were there for what, a month?
I lived in New York between the ages of 0 and 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like I was born in Georgia. I'm me saying I'm from Georgia even though I haven't lived there ever.
Well, I mean, but like, you know, my immediate family lived in Connecticut almost my whole life, but like cousins and grandma and all those other people lived in New York, and I went there very frequently to see them. So it's like, it's, you know, I'm no stranger.
Yeah. But anyway, if just record yourself.
And I lived in New York for the past 6-7 years.
Yeah, you have. And you even worked in New York City for a while.
Yep.
But if you have the kind of voice, just record yourself and listen. The main thing is you always have to record yourself and listen to yourself. If you get embarrassed listening to yourself, you're probably not the best person to be doing a podcast.
Yeah, also remember that if you've never listened to a recording of yourself before,
it's going
to
sound weird.
You don't sound the way you think you sound, because the sound of your voice coming through your skull to your ears is not the way it sounds to other people who have your voice going through the air to their ears.
Your voice sounds a lot deeper and more awesome in your head than it does in the real world. You're going to have to get over that fact.
So when you hear yourself being when you hear recording of yourself, that's what you sound like to other people, whether you know it or not.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with your microphone.
Yep.
And you might think it sounds bad, but other people are used to your voice and they don't necessarily think it sounds bad. Just because you think it sounds different than your normal voice doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah.
And actually, I still think that my voice is bad when I hear it recorded, but it sounds great coming in my head.
Yeah. Now, later in the show, we can talk more about how to make your voice sound good, like really good, because my voice actually sounds quite a bit different in real life than it does in the podcast, but I do things to it.
You got to use your $30 an hour voice.
But anyway, to get to what I was talking about with the popping, basically, if you record yourself and you hear a lot of popping going on, you can buy what's called a pop filter. Now, the thing is, a pop filter costs like $30, and that's a giant ripoff, because in front of my mouth right now is an embroidery loop with a pair of pantyhose stretched over it.
If you don't know an embroidery loop.
Good game.
Yep. Is this circle of wood.
Yeah, it's a circle of wood. I put pantyhose around it and taped it together. And I just put it between me and the microphone.
So imagine my voice, it's like a circular cloth shield.
Yeah, basically your voice, if you Google for pop filters, you'll see pictures. Now, my voice and the audio goes through just fine. But when I pop, the air bounces off of this filter and doesn't hit the microphone directly.
Well, not as much. It's not 100% invincible, but it's good enough.
Yeah. So listen to yourself, and if you need a pop filter, you'll hear it. It's pretty obvious, because you'll sound like this.
And people don't like that.
Yeah, it sounds really bad. All right, so you've got a microphone. You got to plug it to your computer somehow. Now, Nuri versus Oz do it very different ways, because we record very different podcasts and very different budgets. So I'll let you go first. How do you connect up?
All right, well, my microphones don't come with a cable, because I got my microphones and my cables from one of my friends for free. So I have a microphone, and I have a cable that plugs into the bottom of it. And then it plugs into either a mixer or something else on the other end. Well, I don't have a mixer, because I couldn't find a mixer that could plug into my computer for pretty cheap. So I just got this little thing. It's called a Griffin iMic, and it's just this little tiny round disc that plugs into the USB port on my laptop and has a headphone input jack. So I got a little converter that lets me plug the quarter-inch plug from my microphone cable into the eighth-inch plug on the Griffin iMic, and I just connect it straight to my computer just like that. No mixer, no effects on it beforehand or anything. I do all of my editing and mixing digitally.
Now, there are both pros and cons to that. The pros, I imagine, are that it doesn't cost much.
Yeah, it's completely free except for the $40 I spent on the iMic and the $3 I spent on the converter.
Now, I could guess at the cons, but I'm sure you could fill us in into all the difficulties you have with the setup.
Yeah, well, one of my microphone cables doesn't work so well. I think it only inputs on the left channel, and it doesn't pick up half the audio. So all of my signals are really, really low. And there's something called a signal-to-noise ratio.
This is key.
Which means that you have a certain amount of audio signal going through your microphone and a certain amount of background noise picked up. If your background noise is really high, then your signal-to-noise ratio is really low. And you don't like that. You want it to be really high because you want much more signal than noise so you can cut it all the noise out.
Yep. Yeah, like the best signal-to-noise ratio is like a hajillion to zero. That's the best you can get.
Yeah. I mean, basically, the more distance there is between your voice and the noise, the easier it is to get rid of the noise. Because you can do all that in software. You could buy equipment that'll do it, but we don't even use equipment to do it because you really don't need that equipment for a podcast.
See, that's the thing is radio guys, as in radio stations that, you know, broadcast live and such, they have all this hardware equipment that, you know, performs audio operations to the actual analog signal in real time.
And because, we have some of that.
Yeah, because that's what they need to happen. They need it to happen immediately. So that's why they have dials and levers and switches. Because you're making a podcast and you're recording it and then distributing it, you can record it onto a file on your computer and do all the stuff that the dials and switches usually do, you know, after the fact, using some piece of software like GarageBand or Resound or something like that.
Now, as Nuri can probably tell you, while that works great for most cases, it adds a lot of time to post-production.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Not only does it add time to post-production, but it only works almost as well as the actual dials and switches.
Well,
yeah, if you listen to my podcast, you'll notice it doesn't sound anywhere as good as Geek Nights, and definitely don't listen to it in your car.
Actually, we had a lot of problems before we got a compressor with Geek Nights in cars as well. One of our friends said that it's unlistenable in a car, and sure enough, it wasn't.
I tried to listen to it in the car, and it was unlistenable.
Yeah, but we've since fixed that. Now, our input chain, we spent, I'd say, about $120 on the equipment that is sitting in front of me between my microphone and the computer.
You also have a very different kind of computer than I do, so why don't you tell them what kind of computer you have?
So if you don't have a Mac laptop and you just have a normal computer, you've probably got a sound card. And the sound card probably has a 1/4-inch little jack going into it.
It's called the Stereo Mini. That's the normal headphone type plug.
Yeah, anything. Most normal headphones, it's the thing you plug into your iPod, whatever.
Yep, the iPod hole.
Now, if you have that, you're all set. Because you go to Radio Shack or whatever, you'll see a million adapters, and you'll be able to get from whatever your equipment outputs to that jack. Now, the thing is, you don't really want to plug the microphone directly into that if you can help it. Even no matter what, no matter how little money you want to spend, unless you want to spend no money. Yeah, now, what we've done...
There are decent podcasts I listen to that are literally a Logitech headset plugged directly into that hole. And as long as you twiddle all your software meters and all your volume things properly, and it'll take you a couple hours, it'll sound like the bare minimum of quality.
Yeah, the main problem with it, one, is that you can't have guests because you have no way to have them talk.
Actually, I know a guy who he just gets a Y adapter and plugs in more headsets.
I could cry.
And then he brings the volume down, it kind of works.
Actually, yeah. With my podcast, we only have one input. So we have one microphone and we pass it around between the three of us, which means that we have to do a crap load of post-production because every time we pass the microphone, there's a little... sound, and that means that we have to go in and cut out every single one of those.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So our input chain is we have a Eurorack UB802 mixer.
We found out about that because the guy who does the Roadhouse podcast, which is awesome blues music, recommended it.
Yeah, and it's actually very good. It was like $60. It's fantastic. Basically, it's got two... Now, this is the reason why this segment of today's podcast might not sound as good as the previous segment before we had Nuri in, because the mixer we have is great, but it has two pre-amplified microphone inputs, meaning I plug my microphone into slot one, and Scott's is plugged into slot two, and there's an amplifier there before it even hits the rest of the mixer that amplifies the signal from the microphone to a good level. Now, the rest of the inputs don't have preamplifiers, so I had to turn everything else down so you could actually hear Neri talk, because there's no preamp between her and you.
That's because your mixer sucks and only has two good slots.
Yeah, well, actually, I can buy a little preamplifier thingy, just we haven't gotten around to that yet, because this is the first time we've had a guest on the show since we got the compressor.
I told you we should have bought the mixer with four holes, but no.
That mixer was like $40 more, and I was cheap.
But yeah. You know what? You guys don't have guests very often, so it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, most of our guests are going to be with little handheld things at conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Or over the phone. But anyway, then I have a headphone monitor coming out of the mixer, so I can listen to everyone's voices and set levels before we do the show. But that's not in the signal chain. That's kind of like a side chain to my ears. I don't wear it all the time when we talk. From there, the outputs of the mixer go into what's called a dynamic range compressor. Now, I'm not going to talk about the details of exactly how they work or how to pick one, but we're going to do a show on that someday. And if you really want to know, just email us and I can send you all this information. But basically, it takes our audio coming out of the mixer that's raw, and it keeps the levels, the volumes, all about the same. So above a certain threshold, it decreases the amplification so that the louder I get in real life, it doesn't get quite as loud recording to the computer, which means I can set the gain or the input level on the computer a lot higher, which means I'm recording with a lot more data, which means I can do a lot more stuff to the audio without making it sound like ass.
Basically, when you get too loud, it makes you quiet. And when you get too quiet, it makes you loud.
Yeah, basically. This one doesn't actually make you louder. That would be a compander.
Yeah, but that's the general gist of what the...
Yeah, basically, if you need... It's called a compressor. You can do it in software after the fact, but compressing is the one thing of all the things you can do after the fact that it really pays to do it before it hits your computer.
And that's important, because when people listen to your show on headphones or in their car, volume jumps are going to be really... They're going to hurt your ears, even if they're a really small volume jump. If you get a little bit louder, it's going to be painful.
Here, I just turned off the compressor, so now you're going to hear the raw audio.
Yay.
Yay.
Woo!
No.
It's awesome.
I don't like that at all. Turn it back on. All
right, I turned it back on. The difference might not be so bad, because actually I didn't calibrate the mixer or the compressor so much.
What happened to Mr. I had all the dials perfectly set?
I have them all perfectly set. When there's the two of us, now we got this random element of Neri who's laying over there.
Oh no, women messing things up for you again.
All right, so we realized just now that we could talk about this forever.
Yeah, I mean... If we kept talking and talking, eventually, like, professional radio guys would start calling us and telling us we're wrong, or, no, you have to do this, and, God, it would just be
so I promise to all of you we'll do a show someday in the future in detail, like, the specifics of, we use this compressor, this is how it works, this is how you use it, this is why you want it, etc. But for now, I mean, this is just, like, an overview of how to not suck at podcasting.
Yeah, also, there's plenty of other podcasts, like, infinity podcasts about how to podcast.
There's a Podcasting for Dummies book that has a companion podcast. So if you can't go out and get the book, you can go to the fordummies.com website and download the podcast. And it's by T. Morris and Evo Terra, who are both a couple of podcasters. And they've got a lot of experience doing it. But it's got a lot of good tips in it. So go to your local store and check it out, even if you don't buy it.
Oh no, a shill.
Ha
ha! Yeah, there's also, what's the other one? Podcast 411, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, Podcast 411 is good. They have interviews with podcasters every show.
Yeah, that's how I learned about Gizmophone.
Oh.
No, you learned about that from me. Yeah, but I listened to Podcast 411.
Yeah, so indirectly, I learned it from them.
Yeah, so, you know, we're only doing this because we have a lot of, you know, it seems like every podcast has a pile of listeners who don't know about podcasting and want the one podcast they listen to tell them. You know, instead of going and listening to every other podcast in the world that does the same thing.
It's surprising how many podcasts there are out there about podcasting.
Like, imagine if every TV show had to explain television because it was the only TV show that people watched.
That was a very apt allegory.
Or if,
like,
every comic book had to explain to you how to read a comic book and how it works, because
a lot of the Tokyopop manga explain it just in case.
You have to read from the back to the front.
Read it backwards.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's a one-page deal. That's not like an entire explanation. explanation of like, here is, you put a grammar book in the front of your War and Peace, you know?
The main reason we're doing this is because I'm sorry, but a lot of podcasts just are unlistenable.
If you want to start a podcast, we want you to know these basic things so that we can listen to it without killing ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, then we can judge you on your content and not on your inept audio skills.
Because I don't care how good your content is.
If I can't listen to it, it's not going to get listened to.
Yep. Now, by the same token, if you spend $1 million and have awesome equipment, but you're just a guy going, so, yeah.
That's not gonna, no, nobody's gonna listen to that. You have to have a solid idea.
Yeah.
The better your idea is, the more crap audio people are willing to put up with. But there is still a level where no one's gonna listen to it.
Now, I guess we can talk a bit about post-production before we end here. And by post-production, I mean all the stuff you do after you recorded the episode.
Well, the first thing you do is you cut it out when someone says stuff like, and.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or when you have, like, a half hour of just laughing constantly.
Now,
Scott and I actually cut out very little from episodes. Maybe a minute's worth of audio from an entire episode we cut out.
Ah, but how much did you do back when you started?
When we started, we'd cut out like 20 minutes of us just saying penis at each other.
Yeah. That's because you're bored.
Usually the things we cut out are like silence. People saying,
Or if one of us stopped talking, expecting the other person to chip in, but the other person was like not paying attention, which doesn't happen so often.
Except for just now.
Yeah, just, but we're a little, we've had a long weekend of geek and we're kind of tired right about now.
Yeah, and I got a busy day at work actually tomorrow.
Yeah.
Groan.
But that's key. So it'll take a long time when you first start podcasting, no matter how good you are. You'll flub over words, you'll screw things up, you'll cough into the microphone. Everyone's looking at me.
Unless you're like
Rim,
some sort
who's
of...
been sick for 2 weeks.
Yeah. For all of you, the week after KatsuCon, I don't think you all understand how sick I was doing the podcast. I was listening to them, and I didn't remember saying any of that stuff. Yeah, but anyway. Now, Nuri, you do a lot more editing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've only done four... I'm editing my fifth show right now, so you guys have done so many more shows than me, and we're still working on building our podcasting habits.
Yeah, like we've got, actually, we're getting better about it, but the first time we had a guest on the show, the first couple times, I don't know what image you have of us doing Geek Nights, but I'm sitting with my back to almost everyone, talking into a microphone and a pop filter, and staring at my computer and the show notes. Scott is laying on his back
futon,
with the microphone like in the air over his mouth. And Nuri is kind of lounging on my bed.
We should go take
a
picture.
It's very soft.
Yeah, my bed's awesome. My bed was made in like the 1800s. The late 1800s, but still, I wasn't lying.
That's not important.
Yeah, it's not at all. But, and people who we interview or people we have on the show, they expect us to be talking to each other. Because it sounds like we're just two guys standing in a room talking to each other. We're not looking at each other. We're not gesturing in any way.
He's lying. Imagine, like, we're in a TV studio just like Letterman, and we have two desks and a whole bunch of couches.
And a glass wall between you.
Real fancy microphones and a backdrop that looks like the Hudson River.
Our set looks exactly like The Daily Show.
In fact, it is The Daily Show. John Stewart's here.
I'm actually John Stewart.
Yep.
He's here right now. He's sitting in the corner.
He's
making this motion
up.
Like, don't say I'm here. I'm supposed to be. Now he's mad. Now he's gone. He left. I'm sorry.
He left.
Uh-oh, they're coming. I see a cane coming out from behind the curtain. It's around my neck. See,
That wasn't funny, Scott.
No. I thought that would be funny.
No, you want me to cut that out?
I don't care. You do whatever you want.
All right, see, now, I'm not going to cut out what just happened, but that's the kind of thing that you can cut out. Like, if someone makes a deadpan joke.
Nobody laughed?
Yeah.
Or it's just not funny?
Dong.
See, if it weren't for the fact that it'd probably annoy you, I was considering just now not editing what we just recorded at all. So you can hear the raw, like, raw podcast. However, most of the cuts are just silence between bits as we collect our thoughts.
One day, maybe when we do a show, we should put up, like, two posts. We should be like, post the podcast. Post special unedited version.
Or even better, we'll post the podcast, and then we'll post a stream of all the audio that was cut out.
We could do that.
That would be good, because it's not that much. That would be something trivial that I'm sure at least some of you would like to listen to.
Yeah.
It's mostly obscenities or silence.
Yeah. Back to the whole communicating with each other thing. Communication between the podcasters is really important. I mean, I know you guys have kind of
interrupting
learned.
Cow Moo.
Yeah, you guys have kind of
interrupting Cal.
How to talk to each other, even when you're not looking at each other. But for my podcast, we have one microphone. We're in a triangle staring at each other. And if we want to say something, we have to, like, stare at the person who's got the mic and hold out our hand.
That's tough.
I mean, a lot of podcasts are just one guy. The more people you have, the harder it is. Be ready for that.
Yeah, one guy or one girl is the easiest podcast in the universe.
Yeah, two is okay, but it took Scott and I about 20 episodes to get down where we don't keep interrupting each other or where one of us will stop talking and the other one doesn't pick up.
Yeah, I don't even really think about it. It's just kind of like, you know, I just do the podcast.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know us, when the podcast stops, we just keep talking almost exactly the way we're talking now. For the next several hours.
Without a microphone in front of our faces.
Yeah. We could pretty much, we could do a 24-hour show if you really wanted. And it would be mostly interesting.
No, it would be mostly Scott playing video games.
Yeah. Or
you know, I don't play that many video games usually. It's just because you people are here, I can't actually do any work on my computer.
So instead you play video games.
Exactly. Because then at least someone will be entertained by watching the video game. And you can't tell me you don't like watching video games.
In addition to editing, you know, like actually cutting things out, you have to do some sort of post-production filtering. I don't know.
Well, you don't have to.
You should. Very simply, very briefly, a noise gate. All it does is you can say any noise below a certain volume where this noise or this volume lasts for a certain amount of time will be cut out entirely. That can cut out like breathing noises between when anyone's talking or static from your mixer or anything like that, any background noise, me bumping into the microphone. Oh crap!
The problem is if you turn it up too high, or if you have too much noise, you'll end up either cutting out all the noise in some of your voice, or you know, not enough of the noise, and it's really tough unless you have really well behaved noise.
Yeah. Now, well behaved. Some people get good at like the DJ voice or the radio voice, and they can talk at a fairly constant volume at a regular rate, and they hold the microphone a said distance from their mouth.
Hey, everybody, it's Wacky Saturday.
A lot of people can't do that. So the other thing you can do is called compression. Now, I talked about compression already with the hardware. You can also do it in software. I highly recommend that you do some form of compression on your podcast.
Rim, what kind of software do you use to do that?
Oh, software. Well, I use Resound, which I find to be absolutely fantastic. But
if you're a Linux awesome.
Yeah, it's only for Linux, and you might have some trouble getting it to work 100% if you use any sort of good distro, except Ubuntu. It just works in Ubuntu.
Yep. You can use GarageBand. I know GarageBand has a very nice compression setting.
Yeah, if you
dialogue.
Have a Mac and you're Leet.
Yep.
And you can figure it out because I've got GarageBand and I don't know how that works. Mine does. I don't have the GarageBand version that supports the make a podcast.
Oh yeah, the newest GarageBand has the podcasting stuff in it, so that's
what
you want to
get.
Yeah, that's
real nice. It'll actually do the noise gate while you're recording and cut. It does like pops and stuff and excellent.
Yep, that's
real time audio is a pain in the ass in Linux.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, most real time filters don't help much because you can do them just as easily after the fact and the clipping is the limiting factor in recording. And your sound card can't do anything about clipping. That all has to be done with hardware before it hits the computer.
Yep.
The most popular podcast software seems to either be Audacity, which is for all operating
which
systems.
Which actually we also use. We use both Resound and Audacity for different purposes.
That's yep. because Audacity is the free provided software online and all the podcast directories like Podcast Alley link to it.
Yep. It's just a multi-track editor, so you can line up all your tracks and just export, and it has compressors and stuff in it.
The other thing a lot of people use, I don't know, I don't think it's 100% free, is Cast Blaster. Cast Blaster is like the one-stop shop for podcasting. Like, it does everything from beginning to end, from recording to uploading to your website and making the post and the show notes.
Now, isn't it Windows only?
It is Windows only, which is why we do not use it.
Yeah. Though we're thinking about using it for, like, conventions where we won't have all our equipment with us or we won't have, like, my computer with us.
Yeah, we'll see. It has one nice thing about Cast Blaster is there's buttons and you can assign, like, audio files to the buttons. So let's say you have a button with a funny jingle on it, like Rim Doesn't Give a Shit. Well, while you're recording, you just push the Rim Doesn't Give a Shit button and it'll play that instead of having to add in Rim Doesn't Give a Shit after you're done recording.
Yeah, you can also do that with compressors. It's called auto-ducking. I'm not going to get into that now. That's well beyond what you need to know.
Well beyond.
Yeah, if you want to go the extra step and buy a program that's a little bit higher quality than those, there's a program called, Adobe Audition for the Windows machines.
Now,
and
Adobe Audition is actually mostly this other program called Cool Edit. If you can find a copy of Cool Edit for Windows, use it, use it, use it. It's fantastic.
If Adobe you use bought Windows.
It. Adobe bought it and raped the shell that was that program.
Yeah, they probably charge a heck of a lot more for it, too.
Yeah. There's well,
also,
I pirated it to begin with, but whatever.
Sony also,
a
makes a program.
For Mac. I think it's called SoundForge, but it's pretty much the equivalent of the Adobe one, but
oh,
it works on a Mac.
I've used that in that audio class I took with Katsu at RIT.
Wasn't there Pro Tools for
Mac?
Yeah,
Pro Tools is well beyond what you need to do a podcast.
Pro Tools is what professional recording studios use.
Yeah.
But you can use it, and it'll work.
If you have
Pro
Tools.
If you want.
Yeah, if you have money, buy a FireWire mixer and a Mac and Pro Tools, and it'll do just about everything you need.
Sony also makes some sort of Windows software. I don't know what it's called.
Now, a noise gate, compression, and the main thing here is normalization. Even if you don't do anything else, normalize. If the first half of your podcast is real loud and the second half is quiet, or every day is a different volume, it's just going to piss me off.
Yep. Normalizing will at least make sure that the volume is somewhat the same throughout, you know, from day to day, from minute to minute.
So what's the difference in your waveform before you normalize and after you normalize?
Well, it depends on whether or not you do dynamic normalization. Now, basically, a normal normalizer, that sounded really dumb, a normal normalizer. Anyway,
Standard basic normalizer.
All it'll do is it'll find the loudest point in your podcast and amplify everything in your podcast until that loudest point is as loud as a wave file can make something loud. That's all it'll do. A dynamic one will go through your podcast and amplify different parts by different amounts to make everything louder, but make things that are already loud stay the current loudness and not get louder, to use the word loud a lot of times in one sentence.
I can't think of another word for loud right now.
Loud.
Rim.
Painful?
Now, what I do, just a lot of podcasts seem to do this lately, but basically, you want your podcast to be as loud as possible, not as quiet as possible. The standard generally in terms of audio on the internet is make it loud.
Yeah, well, the thing is if you make it quiet, that means that, you know, if you want people to be able to hear it, they have to make it loud on their end using their stereo, their iPod, whatever. And if they do that, what happens is all the really bad parts of the audio, like the hissing and whatnot, get louder also. When you know, and it's just bad.
You want to do as much that you can to the audio before they get to it. That way they don't have to do much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Audacity, a lot of podcasters seem to use the standard of they'll normalize to -0.2 decibels. If you don't know what that means, don't worry about it. If you normalize or amplify, set it to that. It's a nice baseline.
The default in Audacity is that it normalizes to 0.
Yeah, I do it to -0.2. I've seen a lot of other people do that. There's almost no difference between the two.
Well, it's -0.2.
Indeed.
As opposed to 0, which is
I'm just saying if you want to use
zero,
if you want to use Audacity, you're going to have to set that.
Yeah. One thing you can do is just Google around online and look at what other podcasters do in terms of their settings. But keep in mind that if they say specific numbers, they're not going to help you much in a lot of cases because your levels are probably a lot different from their levels.
Yeah, when people are talking about specific numbers in their settings, that's pretty much like a case-by-case basis.
8675309.
That is not Rim's phone number. Do not call that.
doesn't know what that is, you're going on the uncool list along with the rest of the people
we've
already...
Not the uncool. How about just born after the 80s? Though, actually, if you call my... I'm not going to give you
my phone number. It sounded to me like you just said uncool.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it sounded like to me.
Now, I'm not going to give you my phone number, but since you know my phone was lost and that cool guy is sending it to me, if someone knows my phone number and calls it, some FedEx guy is going to have a loud cell phone ringtone going off in the back of his truck.
I'm sure they've had that before.
I swear to God, if my phone gets blown up because they think it's a bomb,
dude, I'm totally calling it tomorrow.
All right. So we're basically done here. We've gone long enough. If your podcast sucks, make it not suck.
And if you have a question, we have forums.
Yeah, like seriously, if you have a question about how to do podcasts, email us or post in the forums or find Nuri's podcast, which we'll link to, and ask her, because we all know a lot about this stuff. And if you have a specific question, we can answer it in fairly deep detail.
Oh, you know, ask Rim, because he sits at work all day and does nothing.
Hey, quiet you.
You know who else can answer the question? Google. Google can answer the question.
Yeah, though, be wary. I've seen a lot of podcasters that have a site on how to do a podcast, but they don't know what they're talking about, and they're making shit up.
Well, they're not making it up. They're just, you know, they think they're doing good when they're not doing so good because they're
ill-informed.
Yeah. It's like that guy who pretends he knows what he's talking about.
Samar Gupta?
Rim.
Samar Gupta?
Yeah, Samar Gupta.
We're going to do a whole show on Samar Gupta someday.
And Roland Peekapale?
Roland Peekapale.
Whatever his name is.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
I don't either.
Yeah, it's not that hard, though. I mean, you search on Google for how to make a podcast, and you should be able to tell pretty quickly which sites are good and which sites aren't.
If you find two sites that say the same thing, you're on the right track.
Yeah, as long as one didn't copy from the other. Another good way to tell is if a guy says something, listen to his podcast and see what it sounds like.
Yeah, if he tells you how to do a podcast and his podcast sounds like, to say what I've been saying all night, ass.
Yeah, what you could also do is go around listening to podcasts and find ones that, you know, look good and seem like they spent the same amount of money you're going to spend, and see if they have an episode about how they do it, because a lot of them do. I'd say about 75% of podcasts have an episode about how they do it.
And if you're going to spend about $100, ask us, because I think our podcast sounds really good.
Hey, maybe you guys should have a how to make a podcast section of your sub.
Yeah, forum. Because, you know, everyone in the freaking world keeps asking us to do a show on it, to do a post on it. Yeah.
So Scott doesn't
want to do it.
Yeah, do it.
Because everyone else freaking does it. You know, listen to another podcast.
But your podcast sounds better than most of the other podcasts out there that I listen to. And I listen to a shitload of podcasts.
Yeah. So I think we should do a public service to the world.
All right.
All right, anyway, once again, I apologize if the second half of the show doesn't sound as good as you're used to.
You know, the part where we talked about how to make it sound good.
Yeah.
That part.
I'm going to buy another preamplifier, so when we have guests on the show, we can actually use the mixer the way we're supposed to.
Yeah, invite me back when that happens.
Yeah.
Leroy Jenkins.
See, now, this is the part that we cut off at the end of the show and just play the music. But, yeah, we're going to leave it in. And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcasts, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.